Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, September 21st, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things going this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So it's been a little bit of a crazy ride for me over the last week, and I want to get into talking about some of the essay-related tips that we've been offering via webinar and stuff. But I wanted to first let you give us the rundown for what to expect this week, because I think there's some big deadlines coming, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously last week saw the lights of Stanford with the round one deadline. Now, this upcoming week, we've got Booth, Haas, they're two of the programs with deadlines, Emory, Duke. Have round one deadlines, and actually Oxford side, I think that's how you pronounce it, are releasing their interview invites for round one. So we are moving quite into the thick of round one applications.
Yeah, it's exciting, and I know what's kind of good is that we have some maybe last minute advice for folks who are looking at Booth and Duke Fuqua in particular because of the essay workshops we ran over the last couple of weeks. And I know that, you know, you and I were kind of touching base on it, but those workshops were a lot of fun. Last week we had NYU Stern, Chicago Booth, UT Austin McCombs, and MIT Sloan join us for a workshop where we just talked about their essay questions and why they, you know, where they came from and what they're looking for when someone writes the response to these essays. And so good news here is that the recording of that workshop is available, and it's online. It's on our website. There's a piece up that has actually links to both that workshop and the one we did a couple weeks back, which had Wharton, Columbia, Duke, and Yale. So if you're writing essays for any of these schools, I strongly recommend, in fact, you'd be really crazy not to go and at least listen to the section where the school you're targeting speaks about their essay questions, because I learned a lot. I mean, I learned just one tidbit. I learned that, you know, MIT is not really looking for you to talk about your specific career goals and like what job you want post-MBA or what companies you're targeting in that cover letter that they require. So just lots of good advice was given out and you know, clarification. So, you know, we had some fun questions with the schools. You know, some of them have these questions like where you can either upload a video or do an essay. And so I asked, well, what percentage does what and what, you know, how does that break down? And I was really surprised by the response. So yeah, folks should tune into those. They're both available.
Graham, I got to call you up on that. That's a bit of a teaser. What was the response about which you were surprised?
Well, so I actually thought in this era that it would be like split, you know, like 50% would probably upload. You can basically, for UT Austin, I think it is, you can upload a 1 minute video or you can write a short essay. And the assignment is just to introduce yourself, tell the committee a little bit about you and go beyond. It shouldn't be like a work thing. It should be just, you know, kind of who you are as a person. And so I figured it'd be pretty evenly split. It turns out only like 20%, I believe is what Stephen at UT Austin mentioned, do the video. So I was surprised that so many people are still using the written word, given, you know, people's propensity to use social media and video. And so that was just interesting for me. And we also talked with Stern about their Pick 6 essay, which is you have to, you know, basically in 6 images, which could be photos, drawings, whatever you want, you have to kind of describe yourself and share bits and pieces of your background. And so I asked questions around like, well, what do people who are engineers who don't feel very creative and are not much of a photographer, like how do they approach this thing? You know, isn't it unfair for them or something? So she had, you know, Rabia from NYU Stern, who was on the workshop, had great advice there. So yeah, definitely if you're applying to any of these schools, tune in. And we had, I mean, maybe everyone's already tuned in because we literally had, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people attending these sessions and signing up. And so yeah, it was a real success, a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, very good, Graham. And congratulations, I should say, being an outsider, having nothing to do with this enterprise, I think it does sound like you guys did a great job.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And I'm hoping that at some point we'll get you involved too, because if we start to do lots of these, like, I don't know if I can fit them all in my schedule. So, and I know you're great with the schools and stuff. So let's move on. I did want to do one small plea for reviews and ratings. We've been a little stagnant since the last review came in. So if you enjoy this podcast, if you like tuning in and you know the fact that Alex and I are here week in and week out, please write a review wherever you're listening to the podcast, or at minimum, give us a rating. It's always just nice to get that feedback. So Alex, let's move on. You picked three apply wire entries, and these are, I mean, I think I say this every week, but these are really all over the map. I mean, we have some people with a ton of work experience. We've got a physician. We've got someone who's an entrepreneur. So I'm really excited to kind of dive in. I'm also, the location of some of these folks and citizenship and things like that is really interesting too. So we'll get into it. But is there anything else you wanted to touch base on before we dive in today?
No, I think we should kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to 8 schools. They are looking to start in the fall of 2021, I believe. And they've been working in healthcare, actually, as a physician. And after business school, they're hoping to get into entrepreneurship and maybe nonprofit, social impact, or potentially work in healthcare, but not as a physician. And the GMAT score for this candidate is a 720. The GPA is 3.6. This person has 9 years of work experience, and they're located in India. I'm pretty sure it's a woman, and she's hoping to end up in the U.S. after business school, at least in the short term. And she writes in her note that she's been practicing as a gynecologist for 9 years with experience providing healthcare services in underserved areas as well. And she would really like to get into women's healthcare post-MBA and maybe work at like a femtech venture first. And then she shares in the comments that she may return to India or to other other parts of the developing world and try to provide healthcare services to women who are kind of underserved. So that's the profile. Alex, what do you make of this? Because it's not every day that we see a physician, let alone someone with that many years of experience. And I'm kind of wondering, I mean, she's in India. How does this all play out from an admissions perspective?
Yeah, very interesting candidate, as are mostly all the candidates we tend to profile on Wiretaps. One thing that I think will be super interesting about this candidate is how she, and we're making an assumption there, but we'll assume female, how she articulates her rationale for getting the MBA and how that sort of has evolved over time. So what is it about her experience as a gynecologist and serving, providing healthcare services in underserved areas that has sparked this idea that she wants to pursue an MBA and ultimately in the long run her own healthcare related business, potentially targeting underserved communities. I would be very interested to learn a little bit more about how that goal has evolved.
Yeah.
And I think ADCOM will be super interested, assuming that story comes out effectively. With 9 years of experience, she's going to be a little bit on the older end of the applicant community. So like we advise other folk that are on that sort of end of the spectrum is to make sure that they articulate good fit, that they're really going to be super engaged in the overall MBA experience outside of the classroom, inside the classroom, and so on and so forth. So I think that'll also be important. As we do before each of these Wiretap episode recordings, we had a conversation about this candidate before coming on air, Graham, and you had some interesting comments actually about her sort of short term goal in terms of coming out of business school.
Yeah, and I realized I did not mention the schools she's targeting, so I'll just throw those in now. So she's looking at Berkeley, Columbia, Duke, Michigan, NYU, UCLA, Wharton, and Marshall at USC. So, but as to your question, the thing that I was mentioning was that, it's one thing to be a physician and to want to get into the business side of healthcare. I think her comment about, I may stay in the US and go work at a femtech venture, which for those of you listening who have never heard that term, that's just a kind of healthcare venture, or typically it relates to products and services aimed at women, often women's health. So that's what femtech means. But so she's thinking about like maybe getting on board with a startup or something. And I was thinking, gee, would it be a more feasible and, kind of just simple goal to get into healthcare writ large? It could be femtech, but it could also be working at like Medtronic or any of the big, kind of medical devices companies or healthcare companies. So I just wondered whether she might be better served thinking casting that broad net in the short term with the kind of U.S. company, because it may not be, you know, obvious to jump on board with a startup. You think about the resources that startups have to hire an MBA, or let alone when it's an international student, right? So now, again, if she goes to a program, maybe that program will be STEM, and she'll have up to, you know, 3 years to stay in the U.S. and work, and that wouldn't be a problem for the employer. But I'm just thinking through the mechanics of this and realizing that to pivot into the business world, maybe she'd be better served. I mean, some of these healthcare companies have like rotational management programs, right, that could be really useful for her as well. So that was just a thought that I had. And I, you know, again, as you said, I'll just echo, she's older, and so she's going to need to show that, you know, she's got a good head on her shoulders and is going to be fully invested in participating in the program and that sort of thing. Because it's, you know, not every day that you see someone coming into the pipeline this far down the road with respect to their career. But what did you think of her numbers, Alex? Like, do you think she's, I mean, because she's applying from India, which puts her sort of in an overrepresented pool, but she's female and is a physician, which is not something you see from India all the time. I mean, you see a lot of engineers or folks from India in that domain, but so what do you make of like her chances based on the numbers of 720 GMAT and a 3.6 GPA?
I mean, I think her numbers show she's absolutely capable of doing very well in the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So looking at it from that standpoint, I don't think there are going to be any problems. I mean, I'm kind of curious what the GPA of 3.6 actually is. I mean, as a gynecologist, presumably she's been doing graduate work and so on and so forth along the way also. But do the numbers allow her to stand out? And then, you know, the answer to that is probably not within that sort of overrepresented pool of Indian applicants. But because she's a gynecologist and because of some of these other factors, I think she stands out on those aspects.
Yeah.
So I'm less concerned that these numbers have to be improved than I would be, like you say, if this was a potentially an engineer or somewhere where schools tend to get a lot of applicants from that same sort of niche of sort of combination of factors. So, yeah, I'm less concerned about that. I'm curious why she hasn't selected Kellogg as one of her sort of top target reach schools. Certainly Kellogg's domain in healthcare is well understood and well known. So if she's applying to you know, Wharton, which is fantastic, and again, it's a terrific school in healthcare management, then she should be applying to Kellogg too, I think.
Yeah, good point. So I think the other thing I would say is she's got a lot of schools on her list, and yeah, I would probably whittle that list down a bit. I think, though, what I like about her list is the range, because it is, you know, there's some wild cards here in terms of her profile. Like, she's not an everyday profile. I do agree with you on the numbers. I'm not so worried about them. I think it's just going to be, can she tell the story and, you know, have a clear set of short-term goals and obviously express those long-term goals of what does it really look like when she goes back to India or wherever she lands. But again, I think enough said on this candidate, but very interesting profile and, you know, some unique factors given her experience and age and everything else, but really interesting profile. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has just four schools on his target list. They are Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, and Stanford. And he wants to start in the fall of 2021. His pre-MBA career has been tech, but within the kind of finance domain. So first in kind of banking and more recently in private equity. Post-MBA, he wants to make the shift over to technology, I believe as like a project manager, and to go for, you know, FANG type stuff. So Facebook, Google is what's on the list here for now. GMAT score 730, GPA 3.18, and he has 6 years of work experience located currently in the US. So we're gonna get into it, but one of the questions this, you know, this guy has is, what about my GMAT score? I've got a 730, do I need better? And he does plan to retake it because he's worried about his lower GPA. And I should mention, just to add some color to it, is that his GPA comes from an Ivy League school, which he describes being like a low Ivy. So I guess he mentioned a couple of schools, but you know, it's not Harvard or Yale, just to make that clear. But he went to an Ivy League school and he majored in, I believe, computer science. So in any event, he's kind of gone from working as a software engineer initially into kind of project management roles, and as I said earlier, from kind of traditional banking over to private equity in terms of the industry that he's in. But again, the function is still on the more tech side. The last thing I'll say before I turn it over to you, Alex, is that he mentioned that he would like to thank us for this great podcast. And he said, quote, "It certainly makes my Monday morning more exciting." And so I thought, you know, I never thought of this podcast as being exciting, but hey, you know, I'll take it. So yeah. I guess we're not putting anybody to sleep, which is good. But what do you make of this guy? I mean, I think they're, you know, it's an interesting case. It's a low GPA.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you had some dialogue with him. So what do you think?
You have a degree from a low Ivy, Graham. I didn't realize that.
Penn is a low Ivy, I guess. Yeah. All right.
Very good. Yeah, a couple of interesting things here. So this person has a 3.18 GPA, and that is the sort of the outlier here in this profile in terms of, all right, if this person doesn't get into a certain school, you'll look at that data point and say, well, there is the issue, right? So I reckon this person's doing the right things. They've done the HBX core, so they've taken some coursework to sort of ratchet that up. So I think that's very good. They have a 730 on the GMAT, Graham. I mean, that's a ridiculously high score already. But is 750 or 760 better? I mean, it would be ridiculous to say they're not better scores, right? I mean, on an absolute scale, if this person had a 760 versus a 730, you'd say, well, that's actually better.
Sure.
So if they can pull that off, you'd say, well, go ahead and pull it off. Despite the fact that, again, I'd argue that 730 is a good score. So I know there's a lot of debate about whether someone should retake when they already have a good score, but from this candidate's point of view, they're trying to do absolutely everything to overcome this 3.18 GPA. And sure, why not? A better GMAT score would be for further evidence that the candidate is super smart, as well as now motivated. And that seems to have been the issue when they were an undergrad. They had time management skill issues, maturity issues, and so forth. And, you know, personally, I had maturity issues when I was an undergrad, but for me, it was 40 years ago. So I've had a lot of time to think about that. Well, not quite.
You don't still have those issues?
not quite 40 years ago. And yeah, I haven't got rid of all those issues, but there we go. So that's one point. A couple of other things here that I think are interesting. This person's product manager currently in private equity. They want to switch product manager, like you say, into big tech firms. That's fine. Then, you know, they have an entrepreneurial goal in the long run. So I'd be curious to see if that's developed at all. Like, do they just have an aspiration to be an entrepreneur? Or do they have an idea that they're planning to pursue and they've been sort of noodling on it and tinkering with it and they're looking for the next 4 or 5 years, i.e. business school and then big tech, to enable them to then launch this particular idea that they've been noodling on. So I think that would be interesting to learn. They talk a lot about the idea in their extracurriculars. They do a lot of giving back, which I think is fantastic. And they tie it back to how they were supported through mentors when they were an immigrant. So tying that back, it's like, it's really good that people want to give back and they contribute a lot during, you know, in extracurriculars. Business schools really like that. But when you can actually tie it back to an experience that has stimulated all this, giving back on your part, I think that makes the stories much more real and evident. So that's very good. Finally, Graham, this person is applying to Harvard, Stanford, Sloan and Kellogg. So they're aiming very high. And as I suggested to them, Harvard and Stanford is a very tall order, even for the best candidate. So with this blemish, this 3.18, let's assume that Harvard and Stanford are a little bit beyond reach. I certainly don't want to stop them applying to Harvard and Stanford because, you know, they might actually hit the sweet spot and get admission. And if they don't apply, they'd never know. So they should apply to those schools, absolutely. But let's assume they're not successful there just sort of playing by what the odds would appear to be. Then they're targeting Sloan and Kellogg. And I just think that's a very small group of schools to be targeting. I would add one or two schools to that list. And as I suggested that on ApplyWire, their comment was, I'll do that if I'm not successful in round two. Well, I want to make it very clear that that's a super risky strategy.
Yeah.
Applying in round three in any normal year, yet last season was an anomaly because of COVID-19. So forget last season, but in any normal year, getting admissions in round three will always be harder than getting admissions in rounds one and two at any of the schools you're applying. So be very clear on that.
Yeah, agreed. That's the thing for me, is that I look at the list of schools and it doesn't really jive with this person's profile for me. I mean, I think the volunteer work they've done is fantastic. And I love the fact that they're a global citizen. They mentioned they're, you know, have U.S., Canadian, and Hong Kong citizenship. So there's a lot to like about this candidate. I think they need to have the right list of schools, because they already have 6 years of work experience. It sounds like they should go to business school now to get that business skill set polished, because they're really making this move from the tech side of things into, you know, the management side. So I think they need to go now. And I'm kind of wondering, like, yeah, where is the broader list here? Because I just worry that, yeah, they need to apply in either round one or two to a school that they would be happy to attend, but that is more likely to be able to look the other way on this GPA issue. And yeah, so I think there are a number of schools out there. I mean, you know, it sounds like I don't know where they went for undergrad, but and sometimes people don't want to double dip, but there are a number of good business schools out there that would help this person achieve their goals in any number of ways, right? So that's my main thing, is I'm not saying I don't recognize the effort they put into HBX Core and that they might retake the GMAT and get an amazing, you know, 750 or 760. I just still think they need to cast the wider net. And you know, that doesn't mean that if they apply to, you know, some school that's outside of this top seven, which is effectively where they're focused right now, that those other schools are not worthwhile. I mean, that, you know, any number of schools in the top 20 are going to get you where you need to go. So I really would strongly encourage this person to add at least one, if not two, schools that are maybe more top 15, top 20. That's my take.
And I think we can both agree they might well be successful with one or two of these four schools. I'm not saying that they're absolutely going to blank out.
Sure.
But in terms of mitigating the risk of that occurring, let's add one or two schools, but let's do it in round two and not in round three.
Yeah, great feedback there from you. I mean, I would never recommend someone applying round three unless they're, you know, unless it's the COVID round like last year, or if they're, you know, running a successful theater company in New York and just suddenly had the idea to, you know, apply to business school and they, you know, went to Princeton with a 4.0 and just toss in an app late round as a very unique candidate or something. This person tech, you know, doesn't fall into that boat. So, all right, let's move on. We're going to talk about our final candidate. So this is Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person is looking to start next fall, 2021, and they're applying on their list, at least at this point, Cambridge Judge, London Business School, and Oxford Said. And they've been an accountant, and they're looking to get into more of a tech role, although it's a tech role that involves finance and accounting. So there's some consistency there, as we read in the comments. GPA 3.65, the number of years of work experience, and this is the big flashing red light, is 14. So this person's a much older candidate. They're actually 35 years old. And the other thing that jumped out at me is they're located in the Bahamas. And that's kind of where they're from, and it sounds like post-MBA they would like to return there, but ultimately the business idea they have is one that would start there but ultimately serve the world, you know, world over, so they're not, you know, married to staying there forever. They did say that they went to undergrad in Canada, and that for the first 10 years of their career, they just worked on becoming a really seasoned CPA. They worked at KPMG in the Bahamas. They went to the US for a few years and then came back. And so they basically became an expert accountant and then worked for an international conglomerate. And eventually, I guess 10 years into their career, so about 4 years ago, they started their own accounting and consulting firm. And that's been going really well. But they have some ideas around software that can help small and medium-sized enterprises do a lot more when it comes to, you know, finance and accounting and things. So for me, I mean, the thing that jumped out is, you know, this person, we don't see a lot of candidates from Bahamas, number one. Number two, they seem focused exclusively on UK schools. And number three, they're a lot older than we typically would see for a full-time MBA. So what do you make of it? I know you had some dialogue with this candidate on the site too, Alex.
Still 20 years younger than me, Graham.
Yeah.
That's all I can say on that point. But I mean, joking aside, on the one hand, I absolutely love this candidate in as much as, yet they're an older candidate, but they've done some, I think they've done, you know, they've done some really cool things in the Bahamas, in North America, both Canada and in the US. And they're now running their own business, and as they quote, boutique size entity catering to SMEs in luxury retail, logistics, healthcare. I can imagine this person has some really interesting stories to portray in the classroom with their life experiences, and I think their goals are good. You know, in terms of going back to the Bahamas, there's some super interesting stuff here. I really hope one, this person aces the GMAT, right? So they have a 3.65 GPA. They haven't taken the GMAT yet, but they really need to target high on that GMAT to the extent that they can. And they know this. I'm not saying stuff that someone else wouldn't already know. And that will help them, you know, also at being an older candidate, because obviously their GPA is from 15 years ago. So it'll just further assure the ADCOM that they're still sharp as a tack and whatever. And I think their work experience will enable them to do that also. But really doing well on the GMAT. And then the biggest issue for this candidate is to show, and it's always about show and not tell, but show the ADCOMs that of the schools they're applying to that they really will fully engage in this complete MBA experience, both inside and outside of the classroom. And because, again, and we've talked about this on several occasions in the podcast, the risk of older candidates is they don't fully engage. They have other stuff going on in their lives and they dip in and dip out of the classes and so forth and get their degree. But ADCOM want those that are going to get involved completely in the extracurricular activities whilst also thriving in the classroom, whilst also be successful in the recruiting end. So you've got to show all those three areas. I do like the fact that they've targeted UK schools, Graham. I think that gives them a little bit of an edge, as it were. I think, well, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but I sort of always have this sort of perception that maybe European-based schools are a little bit more open to more diversity and variety in terms of the classic makeup of the MBA candidate. So in this case, this candidate's, you know, the outlier is they have 14 years of experience instead of four. So so maybe the ADCOM in the UK is going to be a little bit more sympathetic to that, but they're still going to have to nail this fit issue. They're still applying to the very best. They've got LBS, Saeed and Judge listed. They've actually targeted Oxford over the other two. They want that. They would prefer that 1 year experience, which again, Graham, I think you could argue that's probably smart because, again, you know, they have the longer experience coming in, so 1 year makes sense. They can get out quicker. They also have a very strong business background, right, with the CPA and all that kind of work. So maybe sure, the 1 year experience does make sense for them. But anyway, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah, I would say for me that the big wild card is the GMAT, right? Because occasionally you see an older candidate who, you know, takes the test, you know, everything's lined up and then they take the test and they do not do well on it. And it kind of, you know, torpedoes the candidacy in some respects because they don't have, it's going to be the most recent academic indicator for the school. So I really would encourage them to study hard and do well on the GMAT. They don't have to hit it out of the ballpark. I mean, they're not in an overrepresented part of the pool, but they need to show that they have the academic chops to survive, you know, the rigors of the MBA curriculum and to get back into the classroom, which can be a difficult transition after 14 years in the working world. The other thing I would say is I agree. I mean, I think going to a short format program overseas, I mean, they mentioned that there's a link between, you know, Bahamas and the UK because of the Commonwealth. So there, I think it lines up perfectly fine. I was a little concerned And some of this concern comes from the fact that I don't have a test score yet, but I was a little concerned about the list of schools. I think it's a great list, but I would add to it if I were them, and because they don't want to do this again next year or something. They don't have to apply more than 1 year in a row. They really want to get going with their plan to start a business and make this sort of transition. So I was saying, gee, you know, there are other schools out there, and I think you even mentioned a couple in the comments, like Manchester and Imperial. I would add Edinburgh Business School to the list. I would even look on the continent at INSEAD, which the person who posted did mention they're kind of thinking about. And, you know, INSEAD has a terrific network in the UK, and it's a obviously short 10-month program. So that's an option. I think, you know, some of this depends on where the GMAT lands. Like, I'd like to know if they take the test, they could then, you know, shuffle the deck in terms of their school list. But yeah, INSEAD, I had IMD on my list. I had HEC as well. So I think there are some schools on the continent that they could look at too. But I do agree, the European schools are going to be more likely to be comfortable with an older candidate, with someone with this amount of experience. And, you know, I just, you know, that's a, for one reason or another, that's always been the case. And maybe that'll shift over time. But for now, yeah, European schools tend to have a little bit more diversity. And so as long as this person can demonstrate fit and an understanding of what they need out of the MBA and a clear path forward, I'm all in favor. I love the candidacy. It's really interesting. So yeah, that's my take. I would cast a slightly wider net, which maybe is the theme for me this week, but that's my take. So anything else on this one from you?
Yeah, I mean, I did neglect to note that this person's also been super active in outside of work, right, in terms of mentoring. And mentoring folks in entrepreneurship, receiving several national and international awards. So that's absolutely fantastic. And again, it's going to be important to make sure that becomes part of the story that they're telling. Because business schools love candidates that do things to serve others.
Sure.
It's absolutely fantastic, right? So address that. Again, super, super... super interesting candidate, I think, with this one huge risk. I mean, obviously, I say one huge risk, hoping that they nail the GMAT and that doesn't become a secondary issue. But yeah, I mean, I would root for a person like this because they're kind of swimming upstream a little bit, right? They, you know, they're wanting to get into an environment where they will be an outlier. They know that, yet that they want to do that, and they can see how doing that will enable them to continue for the rest of their career.
Yeah, agreed. Well, thanks as always, Alex, for picking out these three candidates. I personally wish all three of them the best of luck. Hopefully they found our advice useful. We try to give it, you know, give kind of straight up advice. So yeah, we'll be back. I think we'll be back next week with another episode. We do have some other things we're going to be recording. I've got some special guests lined up and things for kind of one-off episodes of the podcast. So stay tuned. We've got a lot of great stuff on tap. And please be sure to rate and review this podcast. We always appreciate your feedback. Alex, thanks again. And I guess I'll see you in 1 week's time.
Very good. Thank you very much, Graham. And everybody, please stay safe and best of luck.